baseball, hot dogs, apple pie, and you fill in the blank. Summer and Chevy go together like road trips and sunshine. Check out the full line of Chevy SUVs and trucks at your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers today. Chevy, drive Chicago.
A lot of you don't get to hear some of our conversations. 2 weeks from tonight is a very special homecoming for the man who is really responsible for not only the electric guitar, the recording industry the way it is today, but just so many electronic inventions that it's just incredible to think about. For anybody who came in late, here's just a brief mini history of Les Paul.
History of the man who changed the music from some of his early hits with Mary Ford right up to his recent Grammy Award winning version of Caravan. And it is always a treat to say hello to Les Paul. Hey, Les.
Hey.
Good evening.
Howdy.
Howdy.
Hi, Johnny.
It's so nice to talk to you early in the evening.
My goodness.
Well, Les, we're looking at the calendar. 2 weeks from tonight, you're coming home.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh,
and I tell you, we're so excited. We're going to be there, and we just got the word this week that it is an absolutely sold out show, and we couldn't be happier for you, Les.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Yeah, and I'm so happy you're going to be there.
Well, don't be nervous, you know, being a sold-out show and all.
I'll be nervous.
No, what was, do you recall the last time that you came home to perform? Because I know you've had the occasion to come back home over the years, but do you remember the last time you actually had a chance to play in Waukesha?
Oh, boy, it's 30, 40, 50 years ago.
Yeah, yeah. There's a little joint there in town that, well, you and Mary actually played at way back when, right? A little bar?
Yeah, my dad and my brother, decided to open a bar, and I said I'd go back there and open it up for him. I would perform.
Mm-hmm.
And it was right after the automobile accident, and I was just had my arm out of a sling and the whole bit.
Mm-hmm.
And my brother forgot to hire a rhythm guitar player. And he had no bass either. And so it was just me. And I said, Ralph, my brother, where are the other guys? And he says, oh, I thought you beat your foot so loud you don't need anybody else.
Oh, dear.
Oh, dear is right. And so I looked at Mary, and Mary says, don't look at me. And I says, I got another guitar in the car. And I talked her into it, and she sang some country songs and some religious songs at this bar with me sitting mm-hmm. on a stairway.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll be darned if I didn't find that was the girl I was looking for, the very girl I was going with.
Right. And the rest is history, right?
Yeah, and so I looked at my dad. My dad kept shaking his head, no, no. And I kept saying, yes, yes, yes. You're a roughneck, and she's so delicate and sweet. And, the two of us worked it out, and it was the greatest thing that ever could have happened.
Yeah. Well, and one of the cool things, too, along with your coming home to perform for a homecoming in Waukesha, is the night before a movie is being premiered in Milwaukee. We've seen an early cut of this movie, and it is just wonderful, Les. You should be so pleased with it, and we understand it's going to be on PBS nationally as part of the American Masters series. I believe on July 11th is when that's going to happen.
So have you seen Chasing Sound, the movie that John Paulson did?
I saw part of it. I saw the rough of it. I haven't seen the finished product yet.
It's wonderful. And he followed you. Obviously, he's a huge, huge fan, but he followed you quite a bit during your 90th year, which was a huge, huge year for you.
And by the way, Les, I got to tell you, with that movie, you helped me out.
I did?
Yeah.
You did,
yeah.
Because there's the one scene in the movie where they're going through your house, and you've got all of these guitar cases all over the place, and I turned to Johnny and I said, See? I haven't got half that many.
See? Yeah. He actually stopped the movie and said, See? You could live with a lot of guitars, couldn't you? You just walk through little paths.
Well, now what you should do is do the same with the accordion.
Oh, no. You know what? He'd get me a trailer out back of the house, and I could live there with my accordions.
Oh, I don't know what to do with them, you know? It's amazing, but I believe every guitar player has to have more than one guitar.
Well, yes, I've been brainwashed. I agree with you now, because as Steve said, everyone speaks to you differently, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I think that probably the guitar comes first, and then the wife comes second.
Ouch!
You're going to get me into trouble now, Les.
No,
I didn't know, and I saw it in the movie, I didn't know that you had that wonderful Django Reinhardt guitar.
Yes, I have that. Yeah. When he passed away, his wife gave it to me, you know. And I think that's precious.
Oh, that is a treasure, sure. And you always respected him and felt that he was just the greatest when it came to guitar playing. And then to be gifted his guitars is, yeah, pretty special.
Well, you know, I was playing at the Paramount in 1946, and the stage man downstairs yelled up. He says, hey, Les, there's someone here to see you, a visitor. Should I send him up? And I says, who is it? And he said, Django Reinhardt. And I says, well, then send up Jesus Christ in a case of beer, you know?
No.
And I didn't believe him.
Uh-huh.
I didn't believe him. And I'll be darned if who comes walking in the door but Django. And he come up to the dressing room, and he had an interpreter. And we sat on the bed and played the guitars until it was time to go on the stage.
Had you ever met Django before that?
No. 1946, he just knocked on the dressing room door and came in, and there he was.
Les, is it fair to say, though, that he was never, while he was alive, never really appreciated in the States the way he was over in Europe?
Oh, you mean me?
No, Django. When he was playing here in the States, did he ever get the reception that you felt that he deserved?
No. No, it just backfired. Mm-hmm. And that night, he was to play at the Cafe Society, and he played with Duke Ellington's rhythm section, and I'm there with Django. And it was quite sad because they were uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Django played a side, a way of playing his gypsy music that was so foreign to Duke Ellington's group and vice versa, that they just didn't gel and it didn't go over.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a very delicate night.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've often read about that.
Yeah, and Django felt very bad about it. And he went on tour with Duke. I went on tour with the Andrew Sisters. And by coincidence, when we played Cleveland, Cincinnati, Chicago, we were in the same town at the same time. He playing with Duke, me with the Andrew Sisters, and he would come over to the theater where I was at, and we would talk about it. And he constantly was saying, you know, I'm very unhappy, and I want to go home with my wife and my boy.
Mm-hmm.
And he was very disappointed and wanted to go home.
Mm. I don't know that I ever asked you this, Les. Growing up in Waukesha in the Midwest, and you were certainly exposed to some versions of country and jazz and pop music, but how did you first become exposed to Django?
Well, I was working at WJJD in Chicago and WIMB, and being in charge of the music there, I used to go over to Lyon and Healy, and we used to buy the records. They weren't given to us in those days. And this particular day, Harry Zimmerman, I said, Harry, I can't get over there. I've got to do a show. Would you go over to Lyon and Healy and pick up, you know, the records? And he said, sure, I know what you like. And so he went over, and he come back with a fistful of records, and he says, you better sit down. And he says, I got something to play for you. So I sat there, and the first record he played was Art Tatum, and I'd never heard Art Tatum. And when I heard Art, I was just in shock because I was going to be a piano player as well as play the guitar. And I never heard anybody play that much piano in my life, and I haven't yet heard anybody that could play that well.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was a good thing I was sitting down, and then he says, don't get up. I've got another record to play for you. And this was Django, and it's the first I ever heard of Django. So there were two of the greatest musicians that I could ever dream of hearing or enjoying. And at that time, as a young kid, because Django and Tatum were both older than me, and I was just a real young guy starting out, it was the greatest because I was a very dedicated youngster that loved bluegrass. and country, and at the same time enjoyed Earl Hines, Eddie South, Louis Armstrong, and all those people. And so I took on two names. Rhubarb Red was in the daytime in the morning, and in the noontime and afternoon and evening, I was Les Paul. And so Les Paul at night was playing the electric guitar and playing with either Jackie Gleason or all the big ones like Nat Cole and like Teddy Wilson, Benny Goodman, and those people in Chicago at night. And in the morning and the daytime, then I was either on WLS or WJJD singing country songs.
I got the impression in the movie Chasing Sound that the way the jazz guys were paid back then, you were probably paying your bills with what you did as Rhubarb Red.
Rhubarb Red, I was making $1,000 a week. As a jazz player, I was making $5.
Wow! That is incredible. Because I guess it was Art Tatum at some point. He realized that you had to pack up and leave the gig and wanted to know, well, where's that kid going? And they said, oh, well, you know, he plays bluegrass and country. And I guess Tatum was pretty stunned that you were one and the same, that you could do all of that stuff.
Yes, it was quite a surprise to Art Tatum. Art Tatum, and of course we've become very dear friends. Then I end up meeting at the Bar Ritz, which is on Sheridan Road, around 39th or 40th, on Outer Drive.
Right.
Right there on Montrose was this Bar Ritz Club, and in there I had the pleasure of meeting Eddie South and end up playing with him and Louis Armstrong at the Regal Theater on the south side of Chicago. And it was there that I met Louis, and there is where I met Earl Hines, and that's where all the jazz people that I enjoyed so much, I had a chance to play with them, to buddy with them, and to learn from them to play jazz.
You developed a nice relationship with Nat Cole, who was just Nat Cole. He wasn't even King when you knew him, right?
That's right. And then, when we made jazz, the very first jazz at the Philharmonic, Norman Granz came over in my backyard in Hollywood and said, hey, could you fill in with Nat Cole and do a thing that we're going to try called Jazz at the Philharmonic. And I was in uniform. And so I asked Meredith Wilson if I could duck the uniform and play with these great players. And so with the Illinois Jackcat and all the rest of them, we did the Jazz at the Philharmonic, which sort of changed that whole world.
That is a wonderful recording, too. That's a must-have in anyone's, any serious lover of music's collection.
It's one of those recordings that even today, all these years later, just the electricity and the excitement, and you can hear the audience responding as you and Nat are trading back and forth. Les, we have to break for a couple minutes. Can you hang with us?
Oh, sure.
All right, rest your ear, buddy. We'll come right back here on WGN.
Les, you just heard Paula Cooper?
Yes, I did.
Paula is coming up to Waukesha with us.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Oh,
and
great.
And I'm also bringing my brother Joe.
That's better yet.
Yeah. And we got the primo seats right up in the front so we can just sit there and gaze at you while you're performing.
Oh, boy. I'm so pleased that you are coming up.
Well, you know, we're so pleased that the venue that you're going to be playing in is going to be in a hotel ballroom, because frankly, that's a once in a lifetime opportunity to see you in a real intimate setting like that. I know the Club Iridium is cozy and intimate, but to us, this is just, we're just so tickled.
But now, Les, I have to ask you about the dress code. Am I supposed to dress for this, or are you just wearing a turtleneck, or what's the dress code for tonight?
I just dress whatever I got on, that's it.
Good.
All right.
We actually talked about whether or not this was such a big deal, you coming home, if we all had to get all gussied up. And...
No.
All right. Good. We're going to stick to that.
Now, Les, you remember the last time you saw Paula, she kidnapped you from the House of Blues and brought you over to the radio station.
I remember that.
Yeah, that was you and Russ, and my brother, I think he waited behind. After you guys finished with your show, I came back over here, and then my brother put you and Russ in the car with all your equipment and brought you back
and
here.
And kidnapped you.
Yeah.
Literally, because Gibson was saying, the folks at Gibson were saying, well, wait, you can't take Les Paul away from us. And Joe hit the gas, and you
and
were out of there.
It was raining, and I remember that one fellow that kept waving at me,
mm-hmm.
and we talked about him on WGN,
mm-hmm.
and I'll be doggone if he wasn't listening somewhere where the cheese places are between
right.
Wisconsin and Illinois, you know?
Yes.
And he turned around in the car and came back, and I autographed the guitar for him. Do you remember that?
Oh, yep, of course.
And remember, he had a Fender guitar. He said he didn't have a Les Paul, and after you autographed it, you said, now you do.
I think those guys were actually shouldn't have been out for curfew. They were so young. They were like 18, 19 years old.
They were going to Carroll College.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. That was a fun night. And then by the time you got out of here, it was 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, and it snowed pretty hard. And you walked out of Michigan Avenue. That was December. I can't believe it was...
That was 1996, and that was the year that Johnny snuck you into an office and you signed the plate for that beautiful black Les Paul custom guitar that Johnny gave me for a Christmas present that year.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
You know what?
I remember it so well. I remember. I'm writing a book now, and I'm just writing about my experiences in Chicago, and one of them was to play for the Tui Gang in 1942, and they were in Alcatraz, and they were sort of on leave.
Yeah. Okay.
Is that what you called it back in the day? They were on leave?
Well, I guess the way it was supposed to be understood, that they were being questioned in Chicago,
but they were...
having a big party.
Uh-huh.
And they called me and asked me if I would come over with my guitar, and I brought a friend of mine over me to play rhythm guitar, and they had the whole floor of the Sherman Hotel, and it was all covered with money.
Oh my gosh.
Wow.
I've never experienced anything like that in my life with $50, $100, whatever it was all over the floor.
Whoa.
You walked on money.
Mm.
In one room to the next room to the next room, and the daughters were there, and also Tui's brother, who was in the Michigan state prison.
Uh huh.
There, I guess it's Lansing, Michigan, or something like
that. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he was there, too. And I remember the number that was a favorite song. Mary is a grand old name.
Oh, golly.
That's the number I played for him, and it was quite an experience.
But were you ever scared while you were playing for one of those things, Les?
No. It was the manager of Fred Waring's orchestra, and he happened to be in Chicago, and he called me, and he says, you're going to be busy tonight. And I said, no. And I said, I'd love to see you. And he says, well, we'll be at the Sherman Hotel. I got a surprise for you. What a surprise.
Yeah. Well,
it was a surprise, I'll tell you.
With your days in Chicago, did you ever find yourself playing a gig for the likes of...
Yeah.
Al Capone and, you know, some of those kind
of... Ralph and Al, yes.
Ralph and Al.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And you knew it...
Many times, and my bass player, who became my brother-in-law, mm-hmm. married Mary's sister, he played for him, and they loved him, and they had him in the band there, and he wanted to break away, and they just says, well, if it's a question of money, we'll give you more money. And so he went over and he joined the armed forces so that he could get away from the mob, you know.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's
the mob. It was Al Capone.
Yeah.
Well, now, when you were hired to play for these things, were you ever given any instructions like if the police raid, here's how you get out quick or anything like that?
No. No. I remember a couple of things, and one of them is, I've used it as a joke now for years, but one of the fellows did come up to us and asked, he just says that Al would like to hear where or when, play either one of them.
Oh, dear. Oh, boy. By the way, I have to publicly thank you, and I called you and I left you a message about this, but I have to publicly thank you for the wonderful birthday surprise you gave my brother when he was at the Club Iridium several weeks ago. It was a night that he will never forget, so thank you so much.
Oh, it's a pleasure. It's great. It's just, well, you know what it is. You've been where we've been playing.
Mm-hmm.
When you were in Nashville.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Take my eyes off you guys because you were sitting right in the front.
Well, Steve's brother, as Steve likes to say, his brother Lee is responsible for turning him on to your music when he was
Absolutely. Just
a kid. So this was just a wonderful, everything had kind of come full circle, and he'd never had an opportunity to actually see you perform live. But for you to get him up on stage and embarrass him, you know, for a kid brother, Steve was pretty happy.
And I have to tell you, Les, you know, Chris Lenz, who takes all the pictures and posts the pictures up weekly, he posted a picture, and my brother was in the picture with you that night, and I've got that saved as a screensaver on my computer here in the studio.
Hey, that's cool.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Well, now, speaking of the pictures that Chris takes, every Tuesday morning when you get home from the Club Iridium, we have our listeners go to redhotred.com to see who you were performing with that night, how you look that night, and I observed this past week you were playing a different guitar. You had your black Les Paul custom out. Was there any particular reason why you chose to haul that big, gorgeous black guitar out?
That black guitar is the first guitar that I made and took to Gibson and says, here's the way I would like to have it.
Really?
Mm-hmm. That is the. I'm not going to bring it to Waukesha uh-huh. because I wouldn't want to get broken. I want to put it in the Smithsonian, you know.
Did you just wake up though last Monday and say, "Hey, I think I'm going to take piece of history
it's
with
my
me"?
My favorite guitar.
Is it really?
One of the bunches, and it sounds better than any other guitar I got.
But it's so heavy.
Oh, it's heavy.
Oh,
it's
heavy,
but it's great. It's got the greatest sound to it.
Well, if I'm not mistaken, the picture, and if people can go to redhotred.com and click on the photo main page, and they'll see the picture from last Monday. Les, I think you got a piece of blue electrician's tape on the guitar. Like it's holding part of the guitar together.
Yeah. Well, we don't pay much attention to what they look like.
Oh,
or anything
it's
like.
What they sound like, right?
And they sound great when we play. You know, I started out way back at the beginning when I stared at the sewer digger and got the harmonica.
Mm-hmm.
When he gave me the harmonica and my mother's hand reached out and took that harmonica away and she says, you're not going to play this till I boil it. And that's because he took it out of his lunch pail.
Right.
You know,
uh-huh.
In his lunch hour, he was digging a sewer out in front of the house. And so she says, you're not going to play that until I boil it. And, of course, when I tell the people down at the Iridium about it, I said, I've been boiling my guitars ever since.
Oh, boy. Do you still, we just had an email from somebody who wanted to know, do you still tinker with your guitars now? Do you kind of modify even your newer guitars?
I am making some new guitars, and while you were doing the news, it just struck me what to do to make a new guitar and make it better and different. And I'm designing guitars all the time for Gibson.
Yeah. Wow. I know one of the ones that we saw recently on the Gibson website is that that digital guitar where I guess each individual string can make different sounds depending on how you tweak it.
Yep. Yep.
That's amazing.
I have two of those here, too.
Really? That is amazing.
Yeah, we just go from room to room stepping over guitars.
You know what, Les? As we said earlier, that's Steve's idea of heaven.
Yeah.
When he dies, if he goes to heaven and he opens his eyes, that's what it will be like. It'll just be room to room stepping over guitars.
I got another email. This is from Jerry up in Wisconsin who wants to know, are you working on any new albums?
I have. I did something crazy, and I don't know if I told you this or not, but about 60 years ago, 70 years ago, I recorded and put them away. Nothing but me singing the country songs, the bluegrass songs,
mm-hmm.
thinking someday I may want those. And here it is 70 years later, and I'm going to take those masters that have never been played, and it's just me and my guitar picking fingerstyle bluegrass and singing these songs and surround myself with the greatest musicians today.
Ah.
Okay, mm-hmm. bluegrass players.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And make an album. That's exactly what I'm doing.
So in the same vein as your last album, which was Rock, where you teamed up with some of the greatest people in the rock world, then this would be your bluegrass album.
Exactly. And then I'm making a jazz one after that.
Well, of course you are.
All right.
Of course you are.
And then we've kind of covered, well, it's not jazz. It's going to be blues, but it's going to be jazz.
Oh, good.
Mm-hmm.
Good.
Well,
blues thing. I haven't played blues since I left Chicago, which mm-hmm. is many years now.
You know, that was an amazing part of the movie, Chasing Sound. And I think people will really, especially Chicagoans, Midwesterners, will appreciate the history that we learn about Chicago through your eyes. The fact that when you worked here in Chicago, we had truly the biggest names in blues and jazz that lived here and worked here. Because a lot of times when you think about the history of that music, we think New York. They were here first.
We all got on a bus in Chicago and came to
New York.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it seemed like half of them went to New York and half of them went to L.A.
Mm-hmm.
And when I got here in New York, here I see everybody that I idolized, everybody that I knew, like Slim and Slam Stewart and Art Tatum, Roy Eldridge and Nat Cole, everybody that you could think of that was great in Chicago seemed to be there at that time. And the same night that I landed there, Nat Cole landed there driving.
Mm-hmm.
And we all came to New York, like I say, we must have got on the same bus.
Were the clubs just drying up in Chicago, or what was happening? How were the coast able to woo you guys away from, you know, the comfort of Chicago?
Or did part of it have to do with the idea of broadcasting in New York being more of a, New York and Los Angeles being more of a broadcast center at that point?
You got it. You got exactly what it was. Mm. I had a group called the Melody Kings that played jazz on WIND from 11:30 till 12 every day. And with that group, I was rehearsing three times a week with Jimmy Atkins and Ernie Newton and myself, preparing to leave Chicago and aim for New York. But we didn't know whether it was New York or L.A. until at Sheridan Road, 39th Street, the Hoosier Hot Shots, Red Foley, all the guys got together and helped pack our car for us. Then I flipped a coin. Heads, New York. Otherwise, it would have been tails, California. We went to New York and struck it. And we lucked out and immediately got a job with Fred Waring. A very funny story, but it's long, and I'll tell you another time.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and the other time was when I walked into Fred Waring 5 years later in New York and said, "I'm sorry, but I'm leaving you." And he says, "Where are you going to go?" And I says, "I'm going with Bing Crosby." And he says, "I knew it, I knew it." And he says, "Well, how did Bing approach you?" I said, "I've never met Bing." I said, "I just know that that's where I'm going." And I packed the car up and headed for L.A.
Mm-hmm.
In the meantime, Ralph Atlas called me in Chicago and says, "Hey, would you be willing to be musical director here?" And I said, "I'm on my way to join Bing." He says, "Well, will you just stay over for a few months, at least, until I get straightened out?" And so what he wanted me to do was pick the talent for JJD, IND, and WBBM. And so I spent a year in Chicago with Ben Burney. And we did a show every day, 4:45 to 5 o'clock, right across the street from me there, right?
And the Wrigley Building.
Wrigley Building. And then finally I said to Cesar Petrillo, "This time I'm on my way to Bing." And so I went west, and within 2 weeks I was with Bing.
Out of all the things you've done, you look back on your career, whether it was working with Bing, your hits with Mary, the time with Chet Atkins, some of your early jazz stuff, whatever. What is the most fun you've ever had?
Well, one of the most impressive things and fun, too, was to play for Franklin D. Roosevelt in 1939, and to be with LaGuardia, and to make my first album. And there was another one, but I can't think of it at the moment. There was four great things that happened in 39 that were important. One of the most fun things was to play for Bing every Christmas holiday. I would go with Bing, with my group, my trio. And the reason being that anywhere that Bing goes, they want him to sing. And for Bing to have us along with him. And this was a fun thing, to know that every Christmas, New Year's, we were going to be with Bing. And pal around with him. And if he was to sing, he'd have the best musicians to play for him. Okay? And so that was a lot of fun. Playing jazz in the Philharmonic was probably one of the most emotional moments that I ever witnessed in my life, where I see maybe 1,000 people throw their hats in the air and go crazy. That was really inspiring and a memorable event that I'll never forget.
And again, if anybody wants to hear what that's all about, it is available on the Jazz at the Philharmonic series, and you'll find it, I believe, in some cases, in some record stores, it's filed under Nat King Cole, but it is absolutely one of the most exciting live performances I've ever heard in my life.
It really holds up today.
Yeah, his name on the record originally was Shorty Nadine, because he couldn't use his name, and I was Paul Leslie.
Oh, my gosh.
That's the way it was on the recording. And as soon as it got out of hand, then they used our right names.
What, was it for contractual reasons that you guys couldn't use your names?
Correct.
Oh, well, that's a great piece of trivia. I could probably win dinner with that somewhere.
Go on Jeopardy.
That's right.
Les, I don't know that I ever asked you about this particular album, but it's one of my favorites, and it was your Time to Dream album, you and Mary, and it was really different than anything else you guys did for Capitol, because Mary didn't do any overdubbing, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it was really one of the first concept albums.
That is correct, and it's interesting. It happens to be Mary's favorite and mine, too. And the way we made it is that I just went into the parlor, the sewing room, one of the rooms in the house here, and I had my recording machine set up, very simple, and I made all the backgrounds, made them complete, and then just hooked up a mic in the kitchen, and while Mary was cooking and making dinner, she was singing these songs. She sang in the kitchen, and I was in the other room. We both wore earphones. She had a microphone in the kitchen. I had my guitar there. And the rest of the rhythm tracks I laid down previous to that.
And you both made it sound so effortless.
It was effortless.
I mean, you're singing and the playing. Gosh.
And pardon me, but this is one of the all-time great makeout albums, Les. It, I mean, it is a great album. It is.
it's wide open, and one of the beauties about the album, and I keep telling my group at the Iridium, listen to that album, because of all, silence is golden, and the fact that there's so much air, so much, nothing means as much as playing the note, is that there is air between it, there is nothing. Okay, and a lot of musicians forget that, and they say, well, here's a whole album, we're going to play some notes there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But the notes don't mean anything.
So what they end up doing is just hot-dogging on guitar.
That's right.
With just a bunch of noise instead of savoring a note or a tone and let it just sit out there. That's a great lesson, because you're right, there's that trend in a lot of rock music to just, and I know some of the guys come to the club and they like to show off for you, and they're just fast and furious, and I just have visions of you going, no, no, no.
But Les, I think you'll agree, that's the difference between some of those players and somebody like a Tommy Emmanuel, who can play fast but plays the right notes when he's playing fast.
He knows when. You know, the way to explain it is that you have a picture and you have a frame around the picture. And that's the whole thing. When Jack had put Les Paul with Bing Crosby, the whole idea is Bing is the picture, and I'm a frame around the picture. And my job is to play everything that's complementary and make Bing sound his best. And that's what I try to explain to my players, is that whoever is on that stage is the star. And do everything you can to compliment, to make him feel comfortable, and to get the most out of that person. And make him a star at that time. And so don't show off how great you are. Just play to make him sound the best.
That was always your approach. In fact, in the movie Chasing Sound, Richard Carpenter talks about, singer-songwriter Richard Carpenter talks about your work with Mary and the fact that you always were there at the right moment to just sweeten what she was doing. Yet, you know, you were Les Paul. You were the name. And then, you know, as time went on, people realized, oh, yeah, he's, as you like to say, more than just a guitar. He's also a great arranger and just a brilliant man. In fact, Les, I know we can't keep you all night, but a couple people just want to say hi real quick to you. And we're going to sneak in a couple of email. And Mark the pharmacist, we call him the pharmacist to the all-night show, Les. Anytime we have questions about medicines and such in the news, Mark is always there to answer us. Mark, Les, Les, Mark.
Hi, Les.
Hi.
I'm looking
some
for
pills.
I'll tell you what, I'll bring you some in July.
He's going to come see you in July.
Are you on Monday nights all the time at the club?
Every Monday.
And is a 16-year-old allowed?
Oh, absolutely.
And my son started playing guitar 4 years ago, and actually his teacher invited him to start becoming an instructor in the fall.
Oh, that would be wonderful. Yes,
yeah.
We have him 6 years old. I had an 11-year-old kid playing violin a couple of Mondays back. We have every no matter who he is, he's welcome to come there, and if he feels like playing, we bring him up.
How do you like that, Mark?
Oh, he would just be blown away. I'm just looking forward to, you know, coming and meeting you. And also, out of curiosity, this is going back a few years, does Ben Steinborn ring a name to you as far as Ace Guitar Straps?
What's his name?
Ben Steinborn
or Ace Guitar Straps, because my uncle used to be in the business, used to make custom straps, and I thought he made straps for you at one time.
Ben Steinborn or Ace Guitar Straps?
That could be.
Leather straps.
It could be. I just don't remember at this moment. But yes, there were some people, quite a few people that have made straps for me. Yes.
Well, Mark, you'll have to call us the night in July when you and your son go to New York and give us a report.
And just in case you need a care package going there.
Oh, that's right. You'll be able to take it for us. Okay. Thank you, Mark.
Thanks, looking forward to meeting you, Les.
Nice talking to you, Mark.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye
now.
And let's go to Phil in Highland Park. You're on WGN with Les Paul.
Hey, Les. How you doing?
I'm doing just fine, Phil.
Terrific. I have a question. I was wondering if you knew or ever played with Jethro Burns.
With who?
Jethro Burns.
Jethro Burns of Homer and Jethro.
Oh, absolutely. Sure. In fact, in 1942, when I left Fred Waring, and Fred Waring asked me to sit in as musical director until I went with Bing. It was at that time that I talked WJJD into the Suppertime Frolics. And in there, he says, well, would you MC the show? I said, no, but what I will do is I'll find you the talent. And so my bass player and I, we drove to Cincinnati, where we found Merle Travis. And we went on to Rental Valley, Kentucky, where we found Red Foley. And we went on and on and on to find all these artists that we brought to Chicago at WJJD in Chicago. Now, what was your question?
Well, Jethro Burns.
Jethro Burns.
Oh, yeah. And we found Homer and Jethro.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and they wanted a lot of money. They wanted $75 a piece a week.
Speaking of people that you knew, I want to take in a little different direction for a second, Les. You've had the good fortune of meeting and working with some extraordinary people and having conversations with extraordinary people. And there's one person that, if he were alive today, one of those people that I would love to have spent some time with, because while he is most known for his movies, for his animation creations, I always respected him as someone who is an inventor of ideas and concepts. So I'm wondering, did you ever know Walt Disney?
No, but I knew Mel Blanc very well.
Did you?
Sure.
Huh.
And we made a tape, which has never been released, where I get Donald Duck drunk.
Oh!
It is one of the funniest tapes that we've ever made.
I think I can see why that tape has never been released.
Precious to have Mel Blanc get him stoned and have him...
That is great.
Okay.
That is a wonderful story.
I forgot to say who that fourth thing that was
yes.
1939 that
mm-hmm.
was so important to me,
mm-hmm.
and that was playing for Roosevelt and being with LaGuardia and making the album. The fourth one is that I met Major Armstrong the night before I played for the president. In this 1939,
mm-hmm.
had the pleasure of a fella that come up to me and says, "You're the only guy plugged in the wall with electricity, and I'm down here to patent FM.
Oh, my gosh.
Wow.
And so I had the extreme pleasure of meeting Major Armstrong and becoming friends with him and to climb the tower with him.
Huh.
In Alpine, New Jersey. And, you know, he committed suicide
yeah.
many years later. And then they did grant him the patents for
right.
them.
In fact, I remember seeing he was a part of a wonderful documentary that was done on the history of radio that aired on PBS several years ago. We've got a DVD of it. He was a
yeah.
fascinating man.
Yes, he was.
He
wow.
was a great, great man and a very ambitious person and a great friend.
Well, again, one other thing that I've been wondering about, you talk about some of the people you met. Who was, as an instrumentalist, as a player, was there one musician that challenged you, that you really enjoyed going toe-to-toe with, you know, kind of like the Nat Cole thing that you did, whether it was a Charlie Christian or a Django? Or who did you like to just get into a good jam session with because you knew it would be a good, fun challenge?
Probably it would have been Lester Young or Coleman Hawkins.
Oh,
They were two of my favorites and two people I hung out with almost every night that I worked with Fred Waring. I would end up in Harlem and played with all the great, great players.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
And most all of them were black.
Mm-hmm.
And we would get fined by the union for jamming. Which was a $1,000 fine.
Whew.
So Fred Waring would say, "Well, I just got a call from the union again, so I got to bail you out of this one."
Ooh.
He'd say, "What in the world do you do up in Harlem? Why do you go and get caught jamming?" And I says, "Because those fellows, they know exactly how to play."
Mm-hmm.
They have the soul, they have the rhythm, they have the ideas, and it's a pleasure to be friends with them and play with them. So the Wes Montgomerys and George Bensons and all the players that I played with all my life have all originally been someone that I spent most of my time playing with, learning and swapping information.
Right. Being challenged by them, too.
There's a wonderful scene in the movie Chasing Sound that, and again, it's going to be premiered in Milwaukee, but you'll be seeing it on PBS in a couple months. There's a wonderful scene of you and B.B. King on stage together, just trading fours back and forth, and the two of you, you can just tell both of you are really into it. It's hot.
Oh, yeah. B.B. is just a beautiful man and a great, well, he's the king
B.B.
of the
king.
Blues.
Yeah,
know?
All right. Les, we're going to kind of come full circle here because we've been talking about the fact that you're coming home in 2 weeks, and that is a fundraiser for the Waukesha County Historical Society's Museum exhibit on you, the Les Paul Experience. And Jason, who is a 21-year-old listener, wants to know, give us an idea of something that you have donated from your collection that will be in that museum.
I'm donating the invention of mine of the multi-track machine, the eight-track, and all the equipment, the Les Paul Verizer, which we used on the stage. And Mary and I, the first time we ever used the Les Paul Verizer was to play for President Eisenhower and Vice President Nixon, and that turned out to be a very wonderful idea of presenting Mary in many voices and me in many guitars. You know,
and we'll actually get to see that at the exhibit. Wow.
But all the goodies I want to put in the museum, and most of them will be in Waukesha, in the museum where I was born.
That's amazing.
Right across the street.
That's right. That is amazing. Well, again, we're going to see you in 2 weeks, and we're just thrilled. We just can't believe our good fortune to be able to have you come home, to have you perform with your trio, and to be able to get the night off so we can be there.
Yeah, you gave us a great excuse to get off on a school night to come on up and see you.
That's right.
Well, I love you guys.
Well, thank you.
And I love the Midwest, too.
Mm-hmm.
I love the people out there, and that's where I'm from. And, of course, that's where I want to retire forever.
Mm-hmm.
I want to go there, and so that I plan to be with my mom and dad and brothers and family.
Right. Well, again, be healthy. Take good care of yourself.
Say hello to Russ.
Yes. And
I'll take care of. Yes. In fact, Russ was getting his eyes checked today, and so he was lying down sleeping. I'm going to wake him up now. I got to have a dinner for him.
Now, he is coming with you, right?
Oh, yeah.
Excellent.
Oh, great. So we'll get to see him, too.
You see Russ and your entourage, your trio, and Chris Lenz will be there capturing it on film. And it's just going to be a big old night, a grand time on May 10th, 2 weeks from tonight.
Yeah, and the trio is Les Paul and his trio. There's four in our trio.
that's new math?
Yeah.
That new math.
Leave it to you.
And by the way, one of the others that I found and I became very good friends with also is around today. He plays the accordion, and that's our Art Van Dam.
Mm-hmm.
And I found him in a bowling alley up on Broadway,
mm-hmm.
Bryn Mawr, and found him and my brother-in-law long back when we used to go to the school in Shorewood.
Mm-hmm.
And so I talked to Art Van Dam just a few months ago, he's in good health. And he plays once in a while, and you know how great a player he was.
Oh, yeah, extraordinary.
He still is a great player, but he just doesn't get out so much anymore.
Right.
Wow.
Well, Les, get your rest, wake Russ up, feel great big hugs from us, and we'll see you in 2 weeks.
Thank you.
Thank you, sweetie.
Thanks, Les.
Bye-bye now.
Night-night.
Good night.